Welcome to the Hilltop United Methodist Church podcast. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.
This morning, we are studying another one of our Christian ancestors as we walk through the Hebrew Bible or Old Testament. We've spoken about Abraham and Joseph, and today we're fast-forwarding 200 to 400 years down through history to Moses. If you'll remember from last week, Joseph was the favorite son of Israel, who was also called Jacob because he wrestled with God. After being sold into slavery from their homeland in Canaan by his 11 brothers and imprisoned on false charges, Joseph rises to power in the house of the Egyptian Pharaoh because of a special God-given talent, dream interpretation. Moses was a Hebrew from the line of Levi, one of Joseph's brothers. Like his forefathers, he was an imperfect man who did incredible things. Today we will talk some about Moses' accomplishments, but the part of his story which captivated my attention as I prepared for this sermon is the miracle that Moses ever even lived to do great things. His story, more than any other in the Bible, reminds me of a phrase I heard often growing up, "Behind every great man, there's a great woman." Today I want to pick apart that idea. I promise this will not be a gender binary, heteronormative sermon about the different roles that God's children play. Rather, I want to focus on the aspect of community, the strength and power that we can amass when we follow the Spirit and work together, even if we don't know one another. When we lean into and pray to the same God, the God of Abraham and Isaac, of Jacob and Joseph, of Moses and Pastor Dennis, then we discover a shared sense of purpose, even though we have different theological opinions, different personalities, and different ways of doing things. As the year 2016 draws to a close, we find ourselves as a country embroiled in political discord, addressing global crises, and fearing for our own economy and welfare. We have choices to make as individuals and as a collective body about what we want our new normal to be, and how we expect our leadership, political, religious, even cultural leaders, to guide us into the future. So let's take a moment to look back at our pasts and discover the life-changing power of love in community and faith in action. Let's begin with that cliche, "Behind every great man, there's a great woman." This week, I spent some time researching that, and you know, if Google and Wikipedia don't have the answers, then for our culture, most things remain a mystery. But I was able to find a Texas newspaper article from February 1946 in the Port Arthur News. The article was about Merrill Frost, who had made headlines as, quote, "the most courageous athlete of 1945." And the article said, "As he received his trophy, the plucky quarterback unfolded the story of how he came back. He said, 'They say behind every great man, there's a woman. While I'm not a great man, there is a great woman behind me." End quote. Merrill Frost was obviously quoting a well-known phrase at that time, so we can guess that the slogan in question first appeared sometime before 1945. This is our own ancient history in some ways. And if we look at the life of Moses, which occurred thousands of years earlier, it's obvious that this is a timeless truth. Moses became a great man, but just like Merrill Frost, he did not do it on his own. So who exactly is Moses? Many of you may know and understand his history, but for those of you who don't quite remember, Moses is often thought to be the author of the Torah, the first five books of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Like all Hebrew boys born in Egypt around 1700 to 1500 BCE, Moses was condemned to die before his birth by a jittery Pharaoh who wanted to consolidate his own power and feared the influx of legal immigrants. Moses was saved and raised in the Pharaoh's palace. As a young man, together with his brother Aaron and his sister Miriam, Moses led his Hebrew people out of slavery in Egypt and back towards the Promised Land in Canaan, from which their ancestors Jacob and sons originally came. Moses' leadership began when he killed an Egyptian slave driver who was mistreating one of his people and hid the body in the sand. This rise to power story is not exactly Disney worthy, not exactly something that you want to share with your children, but it gets worse. Some of you may remember the story about the plagues. Well, there were 10, and those were Moses' attempts to convince the Pharaoh to let his people go. To briefly remind you, the Nile River turned to blood, then came the frogs, gnats, flies, livestock death, boils on the skin, hail, locusts, 3 days of darkness, and finally, the death of every firstborn child and animal in Egypt. The Israelite children were saved by their parents smearing the blood from an animal sacrifice around the outside of the doors to their homes, in a practice which we still call Passover. Moses was a murderer and a magician of sorts, names which you may not have ever associated with him. With his walking stick or staff, and together with God's blessing, as told in the book of Exodus, Moses commanded the weather. He parted the Red Sea as Pharaoh's army chased after them. His people walked safely across dry land before the waves crashed back on Pharaoh's army, killing all of the soldiers and their animals. But the scandal does not end there. Moses went on to marry a foreign woman, of whom his siblings did not approve. He spoke directly with God, who appeared to him as pillars of fire and clouds, thunder and earthquakes, smoke and trumpet blasts. Moses received what we now call the Ten Commandments on Mount Sinai, but there were lots more rules for his people to follow than just those 10. And so he built a tent of meeting, a sanctuary or dwelling place for God to live physically among the people. And he also built an Ark of the Covenant, which was a big wooden chest to hold all of the rules and laws. He built that on very specific instructions from God, which read a lot more like a construction manual than like a biblical text in the book of Exodus. Moses ordained the first priests. He took a census of his people. Perhaps he was the first bureaucrat. And he led them in many battles, a war hero. He wandered in the desert wilderness for 40 years with his people. And just when they were about to reach their destination, to arrive back home to Canaan, God showed Moses the promised land, but did not let him enter in. Moses died right before his victory lap, but his leadership was what motivated the Hebrew people to escape from slavery and what kept them together during 40 years of starvation, war, and homelessness. That is a kind of loyalty to our political leaders that many of us could not understand. So how did Moses have the strength and wisdom to accomplish all that is written in 5 long books of the Bible? That goes back to the quarterback, Meryl Frost, and the truth that behind every great man, there is a great woman. Or in the case of Moses, at least 5 great women who got him off on the right track. We find the first of the great women in Exodus 1, verses 15 through 20. The king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shifra and the other Puah, "When you act as midwives to the Hebrew women and see them on the birth stool, if it is a boy, kill him. But if it is a girl, she shall live." But the midwives feared God, and they did not do as the king of Egypt commanded them, but they let the boys live. So the king of Egypt summoned the midwives and said to them, "Why have you done this and allowed the boys to live?" And the midwives said to Pharaoh, "Because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are vigorous and give birth before the midwife comes to them." So God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and became very strong. We are not sure if Shifra and Puah were Hebrew women, Hebrew sympathizers, or simply ethical healthcare providers. Regardless of their motivation, these two women refused to kill every Hebrew baby boy in utero as Pharaoh commanded. They had become midwives, a word which means with woman, in order to be with laboring women in a very dangerous time in their lives. These women were like doctors, called to bring forth life, not to assist in a state-ordered genocide program. Pharaoh would have to find another way to enforce his immigration reforms. And you'll hear throughout the story many points that are still relevant to us in our society today. But it was no small risk then to defy the Pharaoh's orders and lie to him about it. The Egyptian king had no problem enslaving, beating, or even killing Hebrews. He obviously did not consider them to be humans equal to himself. His only concern was his own national or royal security. This Pharaoh had long forgotten the respect and reverence that one of his predecessors gave to Joseph and the Hebrew people. This Pharaoh would not have flinched to chop the heads of two back-talking midwives off. But Shiphrah and Puah were wise. They did not publicly defy Pharaoh. Instead, they joined together to devise a plan for a more intimate, quiet rebellion. Their civil disobedience rested upon a story they concocted, which Pharaoh believed. They could have done as he commanded, hidden behind his orders, even offered an excuse for their murderous actions. But instead, they found another way. I'd like to share a poem with you called Shiphrah and Puah, taken from poet Joy Mead's 2002 book entitled A Telling Place, Reflections on Stories of Women in the Bible. There is always the possibility of another way, always the possibility of changing theology, thinking, conditioning, always the possibility of taking cooperation seriously, of sharing food, knowing there will be enough to go round. There is always the possibility of rejecting violence, totally, of not buying the war game, the toy gun. Always the possibility that one day, plastic models in cornflakes packets will not be destroyers, but peacemakers. There is always the possibility of responding creatively, trusting vulnerability, smallness, gentleness, tiny signs of new life. There is always the possibility of not obeying orders, of being midwives at the risky birth of hope. And so through these two plucky midwives, whose names some of us have never heard and many of us do not remember, it is that Hope and Moses were born into the world. And the third great woman behind Moses was his mother. We find her story in Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. Could I have the next slide, please? Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine baby, she hid him 3 months. When she could hide him no longer, she got a papyrus basket for him and plastered it with bitumen and pitch. She put the child in it and placed it among the reeds on the bank of the river. We learn in a later Bible story that Moses' mother was called Jochebed. She loved her son so much that she was willing to give him up in order to give him a chance at life. Does that ring any bells? John 3:16, "For the Lord loved us so much that he gave his only begotten son." I can imagine Jochebed's tears as she made the papyrus basket and prepared it for his journey. I imagine her prayers mingled into each salty tear, her hopes and dreams, and the terrible ripping pain that she must have felt when she placed her 3-month-old baby boy in that basket and pushed it into the Nile River. I have held my own 3-month-old child, and next spring I'll be doing that very same thing again. Jochebed's strength and faith are far beyond this mother's understanding. And the incredible fact is, she didn't summon all of her strength to let go of Moses just once. After he was returned to her to wean, she had to let go of him again. Some of you more seasoned parents can relate to this better than me, raising and teaching your children, then letting them go off into the world on their own, welcoming them back for a little while, then letting them go again. Rinse and repeat. I hear from empty nesters like my own mother that it can be torture waiting for that phone to ring, hoping and praying that your children are safe, well, and making good decisions. But letting go is, for me, the difference between being a parent and being a great parent, holding lightly to our children because we recognize that they belong to God, not to us, and trusting that God will protect them and provide for them. This is, of course, at times, easier said than done. The last great women in our story are found in Exodus chapter 2, verses 4 through 10. Next slide, please. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him, The daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river while her attendants walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid to bring it. When she opened it, she saw the child. He was crying, and she took pity on him. "This must be one of the Hebrews' children," she said. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Yes." So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child and nurse it for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed it. When the child grew up, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and she took him as her own son. She named him Moses, because, she said, "I drew him out of the water." In this story, Pharaoh's daughter is the only one never named. I find that ironic, since she holds more official power than all of the other women in Moses' story. The beautiful princess sees the basket among the reeds and sends one of her maidservants to fetch it. When she pulls a charming little boy out of the basket, her heart melts. He's crying, and she wants to soothe him, to calm his fears. I can imagine her smiling down at him as she raises him up into the hot Egyptian sun. I imagine him smiling back, cooing at such a lovely, finely groomed young woman. She loves him already. And perhaps she doesn't even think about her father's decree. She wants to protect him, to save him, to take him into her very own family and home. But if she and her maidservants had been alone at the riverbank that day, who knows what she might have done, what could have become of the promising baby boy. Thankfully, there is a fifth and final great woman in this story. In fact, this great woman is actually just a girl, Miriam, Moses' older sister. She can't bear to turn her back on her baby brother when her mother places him into the river, and so she runs alongside the Nile, jumping over reeds and dodging swampy sinkholes, watching the basket bob up and down, pitching around and splashing water on the baby's face. Perhaps he was giggling with delight, or perhaps he was screaming with fear. We don't know for sure, just as we don't know how long he was in the river. But we do know that Miriam was one tough cookie, and when the Pharaoh's daughter spotted the Moses basket and pulled out her brother, Miriam plucked up her gumption, just like the plucky Meryl Frost, and spoke up for Moses. "Do you want me to bring you a wet nurse to care for this precious baby?" Perhaps a light dawned in the Pharaoh's daughter's eyes as a smile broke across her lips. "Absolutely. Thank you." This was a perfect solution, delivered at just the right moment. And I believe that God works that way, not ever allowing us to anticipate when or where or how, but coming to us in exactly the right moment with exactly the right solution, which is better than anything that we've ever been waiting for. I also think that from Miriam, we can learn the courage to trust God and to act when God leads us. It is written in the book of Ecclesiastes that there is a time to be silent and a time to speak. There is a time for many of us to find our voices and to speak our truths about the things that God is teaching us in our lives. And so it was that Moses lived to become a great man. He avoided his birthright decree of death thanks to the compassion and conviction of the Hebrew midwives, Shifra and Puah. He was hidden at home, released on faith into a river, and then raised in his own home by his mother Jochebed. When he was weaned, she gave him up once again, this time for good. He was watched over by his brave and risk-taking sister Miriam, and he was given a chance to live and succeed in the Pharaoh's household by the Pharaoh's very own daughter, a nameless young woman with a big heart for the outsider and the other. It took five women with amazing strength and character to get Moses from the womb into childhood, and I can only imagine the countless number of women and men that Moses leaned upon and drew strength from along his journey to greatness. This story is a reminder to us that we are not alone fighting for ourselves in this world. Moses may never have even met or heard of Shifra or Puah, but if it weren't for them, he wouldn't have lived. May we take a moment today to think about all of the great women and the great men who have gone before us, paving our way so that we might live into our own greatness. Let us honor our heritage, both that of our individual families and that of the family of God, of which we are all a part, whether we choose to associate with it or not. And as we dream about what we were created to do, as we pray and discern what our next steps may be in this world and in this church right now, let us lean into our strong foundations of faith, our brave and imperfect ancestors, our brave and imperfect selves, and let us listen for the many surprising ways in which God still speaks to us today, protecting us and guiding us. Amen.
Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. Locals would say 106th. Our two worship services are at 9 o'clock and 10:30. Hope to see you this Sunday. God bless. Bye-bye.